T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It is now 8:10 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talking. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. Look, here's the deal. You know that it's been the raids have already started right here in our country. Not here in Minnesota just yet, but it's coming. It's coming. You know, the Twin Cities, I believe, is Minneapolis and St. Paul that are sanctuary cities. There's a lot to talk about. Do you think it's okay that these raids are happening? Are you saying, hey, it's about time, get them out, get them out. They're here illegally, get them out. How do you feel about this? We are taking your calls at 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. Let's go over to Chris calling from the road about immigration. How you doing, Chris?
Very well, Carolyn. I really have enjoyed your show since it's come on.
Thank you.
It's real, and it's right on the mark for the most part.
Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. And so how do you feel about these raids that are already starting?
Well, a little background on me. I'm a third-generation American whose ancestors came from Denmark. My father is the son of a man who came to this country from Copenhagen when he was 15 years old to Ellis Island. Mm. At that point, he did a citizenship thing and found his way to Minnesota. I've worked alongside of a lot of Hispanics, not so many Asian people, but a lot of Hispanics. They're hardworking. For the most part, they're God-fearing. The only thing I want to see is to just go by the laws of our land. That's all I'm looking for.
Okay, so those that are undocumented, if they've been here 25 years, the bottom line is that if you don't have your citizenship or you don't have a green card, you got to go.
I wouldn't say that. Somebody like that that hasn't been a gangster or been committed, you know, committed, accused or done a crime, mm-hmm. that's just a regular citizen. But still, we should have somebody in our government that would go in, and if they've got trouble reading English or understanding English, mm-hmm. get a translator, and I'm sure they would go along with it and get real. Be a citizen.
I got you, Chris. Thank you so much for calling, and thanks for listening. I sure appreciate it. Let's go over to Betty calling in from St. Louis Park. Hey, Betty.
Hi, Geraldine. I think it's incredibly cruel and inhuman, the ICE, what they're doing with these raids. And, you know, Geraldine, I wonder, who are the people that are the ICE people that they could do this to other human beings? Mm. Furthermore, I just am having real problems with our Congress that they can't get the money that supposedly they have passed down to increase the judges and move these things.
When you say that the Congress can't get the money, they can get the money if they all agree. We need the Senate to do what they're supposed to do. The House is doing what they're supposed to do.
Yes, they are.
Right.
But the other thing that bothers me terribly, have we heard that the conditions in those detention centers for those children?
Oh, of course. That's a whole other conversation for another day,
yeah,
Betty.
But are they doing anything about it?
Well, that's another conversation. Stay tuned. It's coming. It's coming, I promise.
Well,
you take care of yourself.
I wish that we could just take care of these immigrants and get them moving.
I sure appreciate that, Betty. You take care.
You too.
All right, let's go over to Hank calling in from the road. Hey, Hank, welcome to CCO.
Hi.
Hey, now.
I may not sound like the most popular person in the Twin Cities saying this, but I'm a very kind person or something like that. I truly am. But I think what's kind of happening, in my opinion, we do have, I think, people that are working at a certain job and things like that, and they want to go raid them, no. But what people are not talking about is that many, many of the people that, primarily, who ICE is going after are people that really have committed, not stole a candy bar from a store or something. These are very serious criminals in many cases, not all cases. And what people are doing is, they're saying, the guy, he's an undocumented guy, so you're mean and horrible and terrible that you enforce the law and go and get that guy off the street that has committed a crime. Because I want to say something to you, and I do enjoy listening to your show. I'm a newer listener, but I do want to say something to you. that if you or I or anyone in this country were to go to France, go to Germany, go to anywhere else, and go in and start making all these demands and commit crimes and do all kinds of things, and expect them to just, oh, gosh, the guy was a nice guy, and he had a dog and a real cute little three-year-old girl. I'm sorry if I'm going to sound like the meanest person in the whole Twin Cities, but you have to understand, these laws have been in place.
No, you got to get it out. Tell me what it is you want me to hear.
Well, it's just these laws have been in place far before the Commander-in-Chief. I don't necessarily think that the Commander-in-Chief does everything right.
No, but what I'm asking, Hank, we have about 10 million at least of these undocumented people that are here. And so they have been to work, they've been to school, that sort of thing. Are we expecting ICE to go in and get all 10 million and kick them out? And are you okay with that?
I think that in and of itself is unrealistic and will not happen. My only point on this whole thing is, because I think, you know...
Nope. I got to give some other people some more time. Hank, thanks for calling in and thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. Let's go over to... let's see, John calling in from Minneapolis. Hey, John, what do you say?
I say it's time we start living up to our morality and ideals, we the people of the United States of America, in order to have a more perfect union do hereby. And one of them is promote the general welfare beyond everything else. And we're not doing that. And people who say, this isn't who we are, it is who we are, and we have to start living with the idea that we are not so perfect, and we're still striving for it. I think these raids are just scare tactics, fear mongering, and I think the would-be dictator that would like to be, if we could get by with it, is trying to scare people. Mm. There's facts that say all these people are criminals, and there's ways to deal with immigration, quote, undocumented.
Yeah.
And this is low-level politics by the president. I don't think of him as a president, but unfortunately, he has the office.
He's in the office, man. John, thanks so much for calling in. I appreciate it. Let's go over to Kevin. Kevin calling in from Blaine. Hey, what do you say, Kevin?
I say that bottom line is we have laws and regulations that were put into place in this country.
Mm-hmm.
If the laws say take them out, send in the ICE and take them out, that's what needs to be done. The other problem is economics. We can't afford to withstand taking all these people in that they keep bringing across, or they keep coming across illegally.
So the people that are coming across illegally, by the way, are coming from all around the world. It's not just in Central America. So let's make that clear. Yeah. And then second of all, now that they're here, and it's, what, 10 million of them, do you believe that ICE can get it done?
I don't believe ICE is going to get it all done, no.
Okay.
Just, 10 million is just way too many. But
so what's the compromise then? What's the compromise?
Compromise is do the best we can, and maybe the other half that get away with it, maybe that'll put their little fire in their rear end to actually get their documentation done and stay legally.
All right. I appreciate you calling in and listening, Kevin. Thank you.
Thank you.
The way, all voices are heard here at WCCO on Steel Talk. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you are welcome to do so. We're going to take a break. The phone line is 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. We're going to go all the way till 8:30. All the way to 8:30, taking your calls if you'd like to weigh in on this. You heard us talk about the sanctuary cities and trying to educate those immigrants that really have been here a long time and they need to get the paperwork done. And there's so much. There's a long line. They've made it very difficult in this administration to become a citizen of the United States. So then what do we do with all of them? And so do we go in and we raid and say, these are all the bad ones? How do we know they're all the bad ones? Do you have proof of that? Anyway, if you'd like to call in and join the conversation, we'd love to have you. 651-989-9226. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a moment. It is now 8:21. Let's make that 8:22 here at WCCO. The phone lines are open for you until 8:30 at 651-989-9226. If you're outside the metro area, 1-866-989-9226. As these raids unfold from city to city, it's just getting started. There have already been some problems. I don't understand how they could have showed up in New York City, I believe it was, with no warrants. I believe that's what the problem was, no warrants. You know, and one of the first rules teaching some of the immigrants that have come, or the refugees that have come, is, come on, if they don't have a warrant, they can't come in. You have to turn them away. So it really is shocking to know that they showed up with no warrants. And so that tells me, are there the courts, are any of the courts holding up some of these warrants? I mean, how is this planned? How did it roll out? Because right now it sounds like it's, you know, not organized. I don't know, Jonathan. Do you kind of sense that?
I believe the word you're looking for is haphazard.
Right. There you go.
And I believe, unfortunately, yeah, that has been a trademark, mm-hmm, of this administration.
Yeah, maybe so. But at the same time, they've been talking about this for the longest time. You remember.
They have. But you remember about the ban, the Muslim ban.
Oh, yeah.
That was also fairly haphazard, and that's why it was challenged in court.
Exactly, and taken care of. But here's the challenge. As we sit and we watch all of this unfold, right, we know that many of them have been here a long time, and there are others who are just now getting here seeking refugees, because they know that it's very, very dangerous in the countries where they are coming from. Can you imagine how much time it's going to take? And then they put them into these areas to detain them until they figure it out. Now, Ellis Island was a little bit like that. If you had some type of disease, then they would move you into a certain area until you were well, and then, you know, give you a different name or change your name a little bit. And then, you know, there you are. You are an American citizen, or at least you are able to come in and be a part of this great nation. I think it was before Ellis Island, before they let people in. I think I read somewhere, and I mentioned this a couple of Sundays ago, that there were only about 300,000 people or 80,000 people in New York, something like that. And then all of a sudden it jumped to like 6 million very quickly because of immigrants. Because of immigrants. And they have, all immigrants, all of us have been an asset in many ways to this country, whether it was in our youth, whether it's in middle age, or whether it's in old age, right? Comes a time when we never have to stop giving. So I'd love to hear from you at 651-989-9226. Let's go over to Rob calling in from Minneapolis to talk about deportations. Hey, Rob.
Hey, guys. I want to cover two things real quick. I know you're going to be short on time. So first thing is, you know, having the kids with the families, the dilemma I have with that is, if I commit a crime here in the U.S., I can't take my children with me. If we allow the kids with a parent in something like that, what happens when the children get hurt by somebody else? Then we're going to get blamed because we didn't separate them and we put them in a dangerous situation. There is no right or wrong answer. The problem is we're just stuck with no answers for that topic.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to hear from you, Rob, that there is no right or wrong answer.
I mean, what do we do? I mean, if you get convicted of a crime, you can't take your children to prison with you. Why? Because it's not safe. But we're supposed to allow, you know, set these people detained while we go through the processes and then keep them in there.
Secondly, at the same time, though, I have to say that when women get pregnant and they're in prison, they do get care.
They get care for the pregnancy, but they're only allowed to keep the child for a certain amount of time, and then either they have to, a family has to take them, but they're not allowed to stay in prison after that time.
That's a whole nother conversation. Okay. Rob, thanks for calling in. I sure appreciate it.
Can I get one more thing real quick, Trina?
Yeah, go ahead, real quick.
Well, the other thing about the thing is, I'm reading a CNN story that came out yesterday about the last four presidents and what their deportation numbers were.
Uh-huh.
And it says right on here that Clinton deported 10 million, mm-hmm, Bush deported 12 million, mm-hmm, Obama imported 10 million. Mm-hmm. Like or not, hate Trump, he has not deported 10 million people.
Not yet, but he's on his way, isn't he? Thanks for calling in, Rob. I got to go. Let's go over to Karen. I'm looking forward to a voice. Karen, you're the voice of reason as the female that's calling in this last few minutes. What is your take?
My take is that we're all people. I have a really simplistic view of this. I work with a lot of refugee families. I have, mm-hmm, for 15 years. They're hardworking. They take jobs that other people wouldn't even take. I had a new family that came here, and the man had a job within a week, walking in the wintertime to work at a store.
Wow. Incredible.
Yeah, and he still is working at that job.
Yeah, I remember there was someone who came on television years ago and said, look, I'll give up my job. You know, it was an immigrant who said, you want my job? Come get it. I'm gonna quit so you can have it. And no one showed up.
Absolutely. That's
there you
correct.
Go. Excellent,
that's
Karen. Good. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
Let's go over to Mark calling in from Anoka. Hey, Mark.
Hey. So you got a young lady, you got to kind of watch the way you say things.
Because I'm a young lady?
The administration is making it hard for the immigrants. The laws have always been the same, whether it was President Obama, Bush, Reagan, Bush, Clinton. They're always the same. President Trump is just trying to enforce them. And everybody needs to sit down and say, okay, what's going to be the cutoff line? They got 10 million illegals. Run them out. Well, you still got 10 million more coming in. Please be a little more specific about what he has done, except enforce the rules. that is so bad.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Mark. It's amazing how you would say, you know, you're a young lady, so you got to be careful what you say. I'm not quite sure what that meant. But I think it warrants a whole nother conversation with Mark at some time. Anyway, bottom line is this. We can sit here and laugh about it. We can talk to one another, right? But the bottom line is that this is a movement across the world. It's not just here in the United States. And some people would say, oh, you know, we have the most, you know, immigrants here. We have the most refugees here. That's not true. That's not true. And it's a movement where they're trying to get rid of refugees out of countries across the world, where they're trying to get rid of immigrants across the world. And once you get rid of all of them, you know, let's say that happens, then who's left? Now, we can sit here and be quiet and say, hey, that's the law. Get rid of all of them. Even your favorite, for the Republicans that are listening, you know, you hold up high Reagan. Reagan didn't say get rid of the immigrants. That wasn't it. He said tear down the wall. So I don't quite understand how we've gotten to this point where it's an emergency. We have to get rid of them now. We allowed this to grow and go and grow, all while many of them were sent away. Many of them were sent back to where they came from. But now, all of a sudden, there's an urgency. We have to get rid of them now. What is that urgency? What does it mean? Are you worried about being able to house them, feed them, give them jobs? Are the farmers losing all their farm and now we're going to grow meat from some, you know, cells, stem cell, which is, you know, what I just saw the other day on a science show? It's really quite remarkable. A lot is happening to our country and a lot is changing. Are we nervous that our family is not going to be able to get what they need? Are we nervous that, oh my goodness, my child is not going to be able to learn because there's so many of them coming into the country? So you are a them. All of us are thems. So when you speak about them in this horrible way, just remember that you are one of them. We are all immigrants in this country. We were taught years ago that Native Americans were the original people here in this great country. But they've learned that there have been signs of those from China that have been here. There have been signs of other countries that have been here before the Spaniards came, before the Pilgrims came, before all of it. And none of those before us seem to say, it's our country, it's ours and ours only, and you better not show up. That's us. But it's a movement. Don't forget, it's a movement. Pay attention, because that movement is going somewhere. But where are they taking us? And who will be next once all the immigrants are out? All of the refugees are out, which some of you really want. Then who do they come after next? You're listening to Steel Talk, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. We're going to do some weather and come back in just a moment. It is now 8:36 here at WCCO. Welcome. You are listening to Steel Talking in the 8:35 hour. We are talking about the 50th anniversary of one of the greatest achievements in American history, the 1969 moon landing. This is a big deal. Joining me to discuss this milestone is Haim Benaray. And he's a distinguished professor of mechanical and aerospace. In fact, I want to give you a little bit of his bio. Mechanical and aerospace engineering at Rutgers University, New Brunswick, with research specializations in space exploration and lunar settlement. He is the author of a few books as well. And I'm so honored to have him join us tonight. Haim Benaray, do I have that correct?
I'm Benaroyan. Pleasure to be with you.
Forgive me, sir. Thank you so much. Really a pleasure to have you. What was so significant about that event? It was huge for all of us, you know, sticking to the radio, listening, and trying to figure it all out.
Right. It was huge because, first, obviously, it was the first time it was done. But also, it basically focused the nation's efforts in a supremely difficult task, bringing together engineers and scientists and industries, and also the creation of many new industries, many technologies. So it was really one of the unique times in our history.
You know, it's really interesting. Some people say, hey, it didn't really happen. There are throngs of Americans who really believe this never really happened. What do you say?
Well, I would say that if you look through a very strong telescope and point it to the landing sites on the moon, you'll see some of the stuff we left behind. You'll see the old Apollo landing crafts, the rovers. So it's all there. I guess you have to choose what you want to believe, but it's pretty clear that it happened.
My goodness, if that doesn't prove it, then what would?
Right.
I'll have to make sure. Exactly. I have to reiterate that over and over again tonight to make sure people get it. Knowing that this has been 50 years, we have learned a lot from that, from the Apollo 11. And I know that we have lots of inventions from that. But what do we not know about how it has helped us as Americans, as humans?
I would say that a lot of our infrastructure today can trace back to the Apollo era. Everything from our improved health, medical devices, all kinds of imaging systems. For example, if we have a heart problem, the imaging systems can be traced back to the Apollo. And the reason for that is that one of NASA's big aims in the technology development was just keeping the astronauts alive. That was the hardest part of everything. The rockets, even though it was difficult to create them, was easy compared to keeping the astronauts alive while in the rockets, but also walking around on the moon. And that's really the problem now, getting back to the moon. When we go back to the moon or Mars eventually, the bigger issues are human physiology, human psychology, as well as the technology. But we don't know. There's a lot we don't know about how to keep people alive in the low gravity of the lunar environment, the radiation effects, many issues like that.
Mm-hmm. You know, when they made the movie about Apollo 11, one thing I wish that they had continued on with was what happened to the astronauts mentally, emotionally, spiritually. How were they affected, adversely or not? We just didn't hear a whole lot about that.
Right. That's a very good point. A lot of the astronauts came back as different people. One astronaut came back and became a painter. Others became more reclusive. Others became more spiritual. So it's hard for us to imagine, not having done it, but imagine going to another planetary body and then seeing your planet in the distance, and basically everything you've ever known, everybody you know, everything you know about is on that little blue dot in the sky. And I would say that if you didn't go as a spiritual person to the moon, I think you'd come back as a spiritual person.
I think so, too, because it really helps us understand that the universe, you know, is so much bigger than this little tiny whisper of a dot that we are on this planet. Now that we know, you know, what to expect when someone talks about the Apollo 11, we hear the story, we know the story, we look at different inventions and say, oh, yeah, that mattress was a mattress that they kind of made for the astronauts, or this thing. You know, you hear about that all the time.
Sure.
Yet it was so integral to our success as a country as well, because we were also racing against time with the Russians, correct?
That's right. In fact, Apollo was really a Cold War edifice, really. It wouldn't have happened if we didn't have the competition with the Soviet Union and we didn't see them actually surpass us in space. Unfortunately, many times we make our greatest advances as a result of serious competition and even war. And the Apollo is no different.
Right. And how many other landings, or not landings, but how many other Apollos were there after Apollo 11?
It was 11 through 17, but 13, you remember, was the one that had the explosion and never really landed.
Yeah.
So each of those Apollos had three astronauts on it, and each one landed two people and left one in orbit to do some testing and then be there for when they returned.
Mm-hmm. So to follow Apollo 11 must have been very difficult for those astronauts and for the engineers that helped make it all happen. Where do we have partners around the world that helped make the, Apollo 11 as well as the others all the way through 17 work?
I would say we had some. We had people who cooperated with us, especially, I would say, European scientists and engineers. But Apollo, unlike today, Apollo was pretty much an American enterprise. Today, I think we're looking at more multinational activities, and also, of course, all the companies that are now getting involved building their own rockets. And I think that as we go forward, it'll be more and more commercially based, just like flying in an airplane is pretty much a commercial thing. Mm-hmm. I think we'll see companies doing a lot of things that we only thought NASA could do.
Right, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment, sir. Here's the thing I'm interested in. Of course, we hear about the good things that are happening from Apollo 11 through 17, but what about the weaponry that has been developed since Apollo 11? Was it that trip to the moon that really made the difference?
Apollo didn't. I would say certainly technologies that were developed during Apollo at both civilian and military purposes.
Mm-hmm.
But Apollo actually rode the back of the military initially, especially the rockets. The rockets came from the military initially until they were able to develop the larger Saturn vehicles. Unfortunately, you know, we could say that technology is sort of a neutral thing in the sense it's people who either make it something good for humanity or something bad for humanity. So it's really our purpose to try to make sure that as much good stuff comes out of technology.
Yeah, technology rules the roost. They just made the announcement that whoever makes it, you know, with technology first will be the ones that will rule the world. So, yes, it is absolutely integral today. And I'm sure that you look back on those, you know, what Apollo 11 did through 17. And here we're coming upon the 50th anniversary on Saturday, just Saturday coming up. How do you think we should honor this remarkable milestone?
I think we should honor, first of all, the people who, not only the astronauts, but probably almost 500,000 Americans who worked on Apollo. It was an extremely intensive enterprise. There are many, many people dedicated their whole lives during those 10 years to get the men to the moon. Many, many marriages fell apart because of that. It was an extremely stressful time for the participants, but they were really passionate about the adventure, as well as just the need to do that. And I think many of them had a larger vision for space, not only for America, but for the rest of the world, that it was really a future vision.
You know, go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, just showing what we can do as humans who put their effort into something really grand and future oriented. That's a very positive force for all people.
You mentioned in an article that a permanent lunar base would therefore support human and robotic exploration of Mars. Do you still believe that?
I do. I do. I think many people say we've been to the moon, done that, but that's really not true. I mean, we've been to the moon, but there's so much we don't know, as I mentioned, about just human survival. We really need to go to the moon first, figure out how to keep people alive, build technologies there, and then go to Mars from the moon. We probably can go to Mars quicker by going to the moon first, even though that seems counterintuitive.
Right. In fact, I believe you mentioned, you know, going to the moon first and setting up a base. It'll be easier to launch from there than it is from the the planet.
That's right. The low gravity, 1/6 Earth gravity, makes it 1/6 less expensive to launch from there.
A few brains are exploding right now while they're listening to this conversation, trying to figure out how in the world could that ever happen, sir? Yet we do know that we are embarking on an important time when it comes to space travel. Of course, Elon Musk and SpaceX has been on the minds of many. Of course, Virgin Airlines owner, can't think of his name now, forgive me. The billionaire, he has come a long way with his program trying to get individuals to pay a certain amount of money to finally go to the moon. Are we using this technology and our understandings of going to the moon and what we brought back and all of the Apollos after that? Are we using that information enough? Should we be looking beyond the moon now?
Well, I would say we're sort of doing the moon in parallel with a lot of other exploration of the solar system. So NASA and the European Space Agency and other countries have been sending robots to the outer solar system. We've been landing rovers on Mars. So we've been learning a lot about the solar system. We have huge telescopes in space looking at galaxies almost to the edge of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we are doing a lot on the science end.
We are doing a lot, but in the sense of actually having people travel to the moon and even beyond, do you think that is in the next 50 years?
I think so. I'm not sure whether we'll be able to get there by 2024. I believe with the current administration, I think the funding is not there, and I think the technology is more difficult than we may anticipate. But I would say that definitely before 2030. We should be able to have people back on the moon. And if we're serious about it, then there's a lot of political will, and the society has to support that because it is expensive and it's a long-term thing. It's possible that we'll have people permanently on the moon within 15, 20 years.
Yeah, well, even the lunar soil is completely different from our soil. There's so much more to learn. And I wonder, you know, how long do we need to stay up there? How many do we just need, two or three or four people to go up there and settle, you know, be the first to colonize and then, you know, send back information so that we know and can do better for the next four that come?
I think initially what you said is accurate, that basically they'll go there, they'll stay a while and come back. So we'll have sorties like we have with the space station.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually we'll find people who really want to go there and stay there permanently. And the goal then would be to create a whole new civilization. You know, initially hundreds of people, then eventually thousands and even more. And then part of then the issues become, how do we live on the moon? How do we stay psychologically sane? You know, we're talking about small cabins as mm-hmm. our habitats. We're always in spacesuits when we're on the outside. So it's a special breed of person that really wants to leave Earth behind and go to the moon and be there permanently.
And why would we want to do that? Is it that our planet is in such danger that we absolutely have to go?
I would say that the danger is not immediate, but I think over a long period of time, the benefits are huge. We're basically creating a whole new economy with whole new technologies. We're creating wealth on the moon, eventually Mars, the whole solar system. And a lot of that can benefit people on Earth. For example, there are all kinds of ideas about putting huge solar panels on parts of the moon and then beaming energy back to Earth. So one can imagine that in the future, all of Earth's energy needs could come from solar energy beamed from the moon. So that sounds pretty good to me. There's a lot of technologies that can evolve. And as with a lot of technology, many times we can't predict that it'll happen. All of a sudden there's a discovery and a whole new industry is born, just like transistors and computers that came out of without much prediction.
I wonder how we would choose who would get to go, because there are a lot of people. We're embarking, or possibly embarking, on our first trillionaire on this planet. And to know that, can you imagine what it would cost to get on that ship to go and colonize? But the brain trust of someone like you and others is really important, who lands on that planet and will be able to bring back as much knowledge as possible and make sure that things work the way they need to work when others come.
Yes, that's the hope. And the hope is that we'll look at it as a very positive vision for the future, not only for us, but for our children, our grandchildren, so that they look at something that will keep them in awe. And in fact, one of the Apollo side effects was that while Apollo was going on, many kids went and studied engineering, math, and science. And we could see that as funding increased for Apollo, more and more kids went into those fields, even though they knew they would never go into space or work for NASA. They were just so excited by the technology that they said, I have to get involved with that. And I think that's a big side effect that people overlook, that what we want to motivate and inspire our kids, so they really put in all that effort to really study hard and study difficult subjects, because that benefits all of society.
Right. And of course, that leads me to the question of, you know, is it public funding, is it government funding, or is it private funding? But we don't have time for that tonight. So my final question, sir, is that if you had the chance, all of a sudden tomorrow morning was the day that you could go to the moon, would you be one of those that would want to be there to make that discovery?
I definitely would. I'd have to clear it with my wife and kids. But other than that, I definitely would want to do that. I mean, it's so exciting. How could one not take up that adventure? Would you do it?
I don't know, sir. I wish I could tell you. I don't know.
It's a hard question to answer.
It is. With my grandbabies, I just don't know. Professor Chaim Ben-Arroya, did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
I did. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. What a pleasure.
Thank you. A pleasure here. Thank you, Ms. Steele.
All right. He is a professor, distinguished professor of mechanical and aerospace. This is something we have to really pay attention to, everyone. Pay attention. Stay awake. Things are happening very quickly, and there are plans that are already laid for our future that we have nothing to do with. We'll be back in a moment. Well, I sure hope you enjoyed those 2 hours from 7 to 9 o'clock. Coming up next is All Things Arts and Entertainment. We call it Center Stage. We've got some great guests lined up for today. Some unusual guests, in fact, a guest that I did not expect to come on, but they are coming on tonight, and I can't wait to meet them. Pamela McNeil is going to bring some music in and talk about her career. And in studio will be the Savage Moods. I'm really interested in talking to them. Can't wait. Also, we got a phoner with Rebecca Rizzo and Eric Morris to talk about Chasing Rainbows, The Road to Oz. Very interesting. That is happening at the Old Log. And so much more. And then the Mom and Michael Hour is coming up, so stay tuned.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.